Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
The independent presidential candidate, Catherine Connolly, is with me in studio. Fáilte róid, Catherine. So we appreciate your time. Yeah. It's been a week in terms of the presidential election. And I just wonder, to what extent do you feel sorry for both Jim Gavin and his former tenant?
Well, I certainly feel sorry for both of them, certainly for the former tenant. But it was a very difficult decision, I'm sure, and particularly for the family. And it's certainly very exposing. And I wish them the best, really. I wish them well.
It's a bruising campaign, the presidential election. Have you found that as well?
I have found it bruising, but I knew what I was facing. And I have always been open to a scrutiny. And I stood in July and I was the first candidate out, I think, off the blocks. And I've been canvassing since the third week of July onwards, all through August, September. It's become more difficult with the amount of debates and interviews. So in a sense, August was a little easier in that I could concentrate completely on canvassing. I should add that I had 4 open forums as well during that period of time. In Drogheda, Sligo, Dundalk and Carrig-on-Shannon with 4 independent chair people. And it was difficult enough. And I attended a lot of agricultural shows and the ploughing championships.
Yeah.
And there was press conferences at those as well. So I went in with my eyes open. And
yeah.
It took me quite some time to make the decision. I'm on record for saying that. But once I made my decision, there was no looking back for me.
What's the most pressing issue that we collectively face in this country?
There's no getting away. I mean, the budget crystallised everything for us today. The housing crisis is top of the list. Access to public health services, you know, waiting lists. But the theme for everybody is a sort of a sense of despondency and despair over the genocide in Gaza. Just no escaping that, along with all the other themes that have dominated, I suppose, all of the elections since I stood, really, in 2011 onwards. And in 2011, I missed out by 17 votes. But the same theme in the subsequent elections. Actually, very few people ever asked for tax reductions when I was knocking on doors, and it's actually services in return, services as of right. And I mean, the figures for housing are just shocking and waiting lists, and they're well rehearsed on your show and lots of other shows. Yeah.
How will those then as issues inform what you would hope to do and say as president of the country?
Well, I think the best example of that and the most recent example was speaking to the organisation Alone this morning, and was founded by Mr. Birmingham back in 1977. And you know, it's gone from strength to strength. And I met the staff there and I listened to the management. And I suppose they were asking me to use my voice as president to reflect the what they see on the ground. Loneliness, absolutely top of the list. And to reflect the different concerns coming up. You know, the language used around people getting older, ageism. The failure to recognise that most people in age are healthy, but there's a cohort of people who are very, very dependent on services and the difficulty of getting services. And I suppose for most of the time that I was with them, I simply listened. And then I went upstairs and met all the staff. And they're most anxious. I mean, they were speaking to me as a candidate in the presidential election. But they're most anxious that I would reflect and lead a dialogue with different use of language, not ageism, and a language of dialogue and of listening to people.
Do you think that there will be, if you were to be successful, aspects of the presidency, the constraints maybe in terms of what you're meant to say? I know most of them are by way of convention rather than any legal constraint, but the conventions exist nonetheless. Do you think any of them will be frustrating for you? are the things that you would feel that you can say on the campaign that you won't be able to say as president?
I have always been a listener, really. I've always been a listener and someone that listens and reflects and carries out research with the help of a very good team of people. So I've never been given to a quick retort or to use social media with tweets. I'm not that kind of person. Mm. So I don't think I'll find it frustrating that way. I think it's natural for me to listen. You know, I was a psychologist for a good few years and a barrister as well. And so I think I have that ability to listen and reflect. I think the Constitution sets out that the president takes precedent over anybody else. That in itself is an enormous honour and privilege and something to be treasured. I'm fully aware of the constraints under the Constitution. However, and I've referred to this article very often, Article 12.8 obliges the president to take a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. And I think that's rather broad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it allows for scope there for any president to look and reflect on what does that mean.
Yeah.
Does 16,000 plus people in homeless accommodation, and they're the figures that we know. Mm. I mean, this hidden accommodation, is that in the interest of the welfare of the people of Ireland?
No, but I suppose, you know, you've got Jennifer Carroll McNeill today, the Minister for Health, who's suggesting you shouldn't be commenting on the budget at all, given that you're running for president. And listen, I suspect the response is you're only running for president. You're sitting as a TD still, and you commented in that context. But if that's the rhetoric already, were you to become president, there might be an expectation from some people, maybe Jennifer Carroll McNeill and others, that you would say nothing about these issues.
Yeah, I don't think we elect a president to say nothing. And I think the current president and indeed previous presidents have stood proud. And the current president has repeatedly spoken out when he felt it was necessary in relation to peace, in relation to the housing crisis. And I don't think he broke any rules. He was in compliance with the Constitution. And he certainly gave people of this country hope. He gave them hope. Now, I can't win as a TD. So I'm an elected TD to do my job. And up to now, I have never missed a single day in the Dáil. I was elected in 2016. I have never missed a single day. That's my work ethic and that's my commitment. And I wanted to see the budget out. It's really crucial, a budget. You know, it was a chance for a government to set a new vision in view of the fact that we face an existential threat from climate change, the housing crisis, and so on. I don't think I can keep that up in the last 2 weeks, but I've certainly fulfilled my commitment as a TD till now.
You and I have spoken before about, you know, the comments you made about German defence policy and the comparison with the 1930s. I don't want to necessarily relitigate it all. And you've spoken about it with others and you've explained exactly why you said it, and people can make their own judgments, and they will on the 24th, one way or the other. But is that the type of thing you would repeat as president?
You see, I think perhaps maybe, you know, things have to be looked at in context. And I expressed, and I still express, serious concerns and about the increased military spending.
Oh, I know that. And I accept the argument. I mean,
but I used Germany as an example. The country.
But would you use Germany as an example as president?
You see, that was done in context. I would certainly express my concerns at increased military spending. Mm. I would certainly use my voice as for peace in the world. I feel we've absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain.
But could you not see how that would lead to a real diplomatic to-do between ourselves and Germany? If you did that as president, it's one thing to do it as a candidate, but were the president of Ireland to make that comparison, despite the context, you know what I mean? The German government would feel compelled to respond to it and say something, and suddenly the Irish government would be caught between
absolutely, you and them. I think I worked 4.5 years approximately as Leascean Comhairle, and I think I fulfilled that role very, very well. I was able to carry out my function professionally and meet with dignitaries and respect every opinion in the Dáil. And I think my record stands for itself.
Yeah.
And as I said, I'm not given to quick retorts, but the increasing spend on military spending throughout Europe, it's a matter of concern.
Yeah.
And that's something that's
sorry,
very
and
important.
I'm not trying to catch out, but you're not really answering the question.
Why not?
Would you repeat that? Would you have any qualms or any hesitation in using that as the example, were you president?
I don't think I'd be so specific as president, you know, but I think you have a different role as president to reflect on what values, what are our core values as a people, and how would I reflect that as president in compliance with the Constitution? And I think that's very important that I would do that, whatever the issue is.
Where would you like to travel to as president? Where is the first country you'd like to visit?
I think I'd probably go up to the north immediately as president. I would also like to go to Palestine. I haven't been there and I would love to go. I also think of the other country, Sudan, that has suffered such terrible starvation and war. And I'm singling out any one country, but Palestine has just shown the Palestinian people such resilience, resistance. And not just that, but I don't know how they've done it. They've showed a joy of living and a pride in their culture. But there are many places I'd like to visit. Many, many places as president.
The Irish state subscribes to the two state solution as set out in the Oslo Accords. What's your own personal view as to what settlement might lead to the longest lasting peace in the region? Is it two independent states side by side, or is it the dismantling of the states as they exist at the moment, Israel and what is Palestine, and you have a multi-ethnic, multi-denominational state?
Yeah. I suppose the first thing is to stop the genocide. The second thing is to have a peace plan that is a peace plan and that will have lasting consequences. And I've spent quite some time over the last number of years reading up on Palestine, reading up on Israel, reading up on the history. And I've referred to a two-state solution on more than one occasion. But I think it's up to the people of Palestine to decide in a peace plan, in negotiations, what is the right solution for them. And I wouldn't be arrogant enough to tell them. And they've been through hell and back.
Do you think a two-state... So do you think there's a viable state there, given the settlements in the West Bank?
Well, the settlements in the West Bank are completely illegal and they shouldn't be taking place. And Israel has to stop and they have to withdraw. It's illegal. International law, it's completely against international law what they've done, you know. It's hard as a human being and as a woman, you know, to talk about while genocide is unfolding under our eyes. It's something, you know, we can't sort of acknowledge and then move on to the next topic. It's quite difficult. It's quite difficult to do that. You can never accept genocide, full stop. And I really hope there's a peace plan that's effective. I really do.
What country is the biggest threat to peace in the world today?
Yeah, I don't reduce countries. I don't use that prism. I think that we are a neutral country. We're an independent sovereign state with a proud tradition of neutrality. And I think there's an obligation on us to actually use our voice as best we can to bring peaceful solutions. Clearly, Russia has invaded the Ukraine, absolutely in breach of international law. What Israel has done is shocking under the title of self-defence. And we need, I think, you know, it's a very proud tradition we have, policy. It's not enshrined in the Constitution, but it's a policy held dear and repeated. Polls have shown that we value our neutrality. And I think we have to use it. And I don't think it's free riding on other countries. I think it's a very important role for us. And we've been sending peacekeepers abroad since 1958, uninterrupted. And we should build on that. We have a credibility, I believe, that's way beyond this small country. And people trust us. And they trust us because we're neutral. They trust us because we've had a history of colonization, a terrible famine, and because we've peacefully resolved the conflict in the north. And that's a very special background. For a small country, and to use our voice for peace.
Do you think NATO are a force for good in the world?
I think NATO are a military alliance, and I don't believe we should ever join them. Okay, and I think it's not a question. It's a question of us as a small country. what is the best way to use our soft power.
Mm.
Absolutely.
But do you think the world, or certainly Europe, is safer for NATO's existence?
I think the best way, I can only answer that in this way. I think that we should be using our voice all of the time to stop the normalisation of war.
Mm.
There are 165 million people displaced as we speak, approximately, because of wars, ongoing wars, conflict, climate change. 165 million. More wars won't resolve that. And again, I go back to our experience.
Yeah.
I think we need to use our experience.
We have a relationship as a country with NATO, its Partnership for Peace program and others. So we're not entirely non-aligned in that sense. Do you think we should withdraw from that?
I think that we are now part of that, and that's a policy decision. And I've expressed my views over the years in the Dáil. But it's a policy decision for government. The role of president...
But your own view, do you think we should withdraw from that?
Well, I've expressed my views over the year of the closer and closer stepping. Europe in itself is moving towards a militarised Europe. And then Ireland are taking steps incrementally over the years. And of course, successive governments said, this doesn't breach our neutrality. So I suppose as president, I would prefer to focus on how a president can use their voice in the world as a force for good and to reflect our values as best we can.
So as president, if you were to be elected, one suspects if the programme for government continues to roll out as the government parties would hope it does, you'd have to sign legislation to dismantle the triple lock. And I know you've been asked about it and you said, listen, I would do my job as president. I did my job as last Count Corley. You've talked about that here today as well. How would you feel about signing that legislation?
I don't think it's a matter of what my feelings are.
No, but I think people would be curious to know what they are.
I think it's a matter of that people clearly understand the role of a president in relation to legislation.
No, absolutely. And it would be there would be a constitutional crisis if you refused to sign it. Yeah. You'd have to find new digs.
I think perhaps...
But how would you feel about putting your name to that, that your name would be on that legislation?
That's speculation and feelings, whereas I think...
You're kind of avoiding answering that now.
I'll have to come back to you about my feelings in relation to that. I mean, nobody's in any doubt as to where I would stand in relation to our neutrality and the triple lock. And actually, nobody was in any doubt in relation to where our Taoiseach was as well, that it was at the core of our neutrality, the triple lock. I think that there should be a referendum in relation to any changes to our neutrality. But again, that's for the people for the Dáil to decide in relation to that.
But that would be an optional thing. There's no. Is it your understanding of the Constitution or your interpretation of it that we should have a referendum to dismantle the triple lock?
Neutrality is not in our Constitution. And the triple lock, according to Micheál Martin, it's at the core. It's no longer at the core now. So here we have a situation where language is the opposite. So the triple lock is not no longer at the core of our neutrality. But I think people, certainly my opinion is the triple lock is at the core of our neutrality. Lisbon Treaty and the Nice Treaty absolutely give solemn declarations. And the triple lock was used very forcibly on both occasions to reassure the people of Ireland that our neutrality couldn't be interfered with.
Mm.
So my opinion on that, it was an integral part of our neutrality. So therefore, to change it, it should go back to the people. It should definitely go back to the people for a referendum in relation to any change to our neutrality.
The other story you've had to contend with in recent days was to do with Ursula Kinnon. And again, you've answered questions about that, and people will make their own judgment based on those answers on the 24th. So I don't want to get too lost in the weeds on it, except to ask, when you said that you spoke to her and you asked questions of her, and then you spoke to people in the prison system, and you spoke to Éamon O'Caoimh and you spoke to others, did you ask Ursula Kinnon what herself and her colleagues were planning to do with the weapons?
I didn't.
Were you curious at all?
I was curious to see this woman and her background and what she had achieved in prison.
Mm.
I'm absolutely, I made a decision to give her work based on her rehabilitation. And I think it's really important that I keep saying this. I was actually just looking for the notes in relation to what was said about this story, which is important because the story has been framed. And if I just look at what was said, according to multiple sources, An Gardaí Síochána refused to grant the clearance. And then there were sort of allegations that perhaps I had an active role in this. And so I had actually no role in anything to do with the vetting of this woman. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I signed her in every day, which is a normal procedure, absolutely normal. Number three, she filled out an application form day one and the application process took its course. Yeah. And that's what happened. And really,
but were you not curious? You know, some crimes are ends in and of themselves and some other crimes are means to an end. And buying weapons off a known arms dealer, one suspect, that's a crime that's a means to another end.
It was a very serious crime.
Would you not have a natural curiosity as to what were you going to do with those weapons? One of them had been used in a murder in Talla. Nobody in the group were in any way connected, and it's important to say that. Absolutely not. But my point is that you're right, it's really serious, but it's a means to an end,
I'm not
acquiring a weapon.
There was a special criminal court sitting and hearing in relation to this matter.
But is that remarkably incurious on your behalf? They were going to do with these guns?
They were the judges. Okay, there was a prison sentence. She served her time in prison. She got out earlier than her time. She had absolutely rehabilitated. And I really, there are serious questions here in relation to this. How serious are we about rehabilitation? How serious? Does somebody deserve a second chance having served their prison term? And where are we going as a society if we're going to punish them again and again? What kind of does that say about
us? Is there any limits on that in your mind?
Every case is different. Every case is different. And this woman was fully rehabilitated. She's gone on to better things. And I'm really, really upset that her name has been used, her picture has been used for the purposes of trying to do me damage.
Yeah.
And in fact, Kieran, as I canvass, I can't tell you how many people, we've had some phone calls from victims, absolutely, and we've listened to them and I understand what they're saying. And I've had lots of feedback from people saying, thank you very much. Thank you very much for speaking up for people who deserve a second chance.
But is there anybody who you would rule out for a job based on the nature of the conviction?
Again, it's speculative. I only can deal with what I did and talk to the facts of that.
Yeah.
And
there
are serious questions here, really, that should be put as to how this became a story. Who put this story in the domain? For what purpose? How did it come? And implications for the future for people who are going through a vetting process, that it will be made public. By whom and for what purpose?
Is there anybody you would rule out, though, for a position based on the nature of their conviction?
I would, as I said, my background is to look at anything that comes before me, look at it, reflect on it, think about it and make decisions.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I try not to speculate. I try to look and see. Obviously, you know, you're not perfect, but you do your best. And that's what
I know, but given what you just said about the, you know, rehabilitation and it's not our role in society to punish somebody twice.
No.
But then it sounds like you're adding a slight qualification to that. I'll make a decision based on the matter at hand.
The decision was based on the suitability of the person.
If somebody was perfectly suitable for a job in the ORIS and you were president, but they had served a sentence as a rapist, would that put you off hiring them?
I'd have to reflect on that. I'd have to think on that. This person was absolutely perfect.
If they were perfect for the job, a convicted rapist.
I'd have to think about that. Obviously, as a woman, straight away, my reaction is
yeah.
But I'd have to.
Does it not undermine what you just said about rehabilitation? And it's not our job in society to punish someone twice.
This is the whole point why I said as a woman I react. But so obviously I'd have to think about that. Of course I would. I'd have to reflect.
Okay.
I'd have to look at that.
Well, Listen, loads of questions coming in for you, Catherine. We don't have time for any of them because unfair. This is my privilege. I get to eat off all the clock. Yeah. I know you're really, really busy, as I said at the start. So we do appreciate you coming
in. You're more than welcome. Fáilte róid.
Yeah, all more. Satúchán. Gormágatúrish.
Gormágatúhén.
Yeah. Catherine Connolly, who is running for the president as an independent candidate.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.